future would seem to be utterly independent of the past. Either we use causality to connect the dots and draw a coherent picture of time, or we settle for a random scattering of independent dots without spatial or temporal pattern and thus without meaning. At the risk of understatement, the philosophical effects of this assumed dichotomy have been corrosive in the extreme. No universe that exists or evolves strictly as a function of external determinacy, randomness, or an alternation of the two can offer much in the way of meaning. Where freedom and volition are irrelevant, so is much of human experience and individuality. But there is another possibility, after all: self-determinacy. Self-determinacy is like a circuitous boundary separating the poles of the above dichotomy, a reflexive and therefore closed boundary, the formation of which involves neither pre-existing laws nor external structure. Thus, it is the type of causal attribution suitable for a perfectly self-contained system. Self-determinacy is a deep but subtle concept, owing largely to the fact that, unlike either determinacy or randomness, it is a source of bona fide meaning. Where a system determines its own composition, properties, and evolution independently of external laws or structures, it can determine its own meaning and ensure by its self-configuration that its inhabitants are crucially implicated therein. Diagram 1.1. Indeterminacy. 2. External determinacy 3a, self-determinacy 3b. Intrinsic self-determinacy, the effectual aspect of the object or event, has simply been moved inside the causal aspect, permitting the internalization of the blue arrow of determinacy and making causality endomorphic. If determinacy corresponds to an arrow of causation pointing to an event from a surrounding medium, then indeterminacy corresponds to no arrow at all, a causality, and self-determinacy to a looping arrow or complex of arrows involving some kind of feedback. But cybernetic feedback, which involves information passed among controllers and regulated entities through a conductive or transmissive medium, is meaningless where such entities do not already exist, and where no sensory or actuative protocol has yet been provided. With respect to the origin of any self-determinative, perfectly self-contained system, the feedback is ontological in nature, and therefore more than cybernetic. Accordingly, ontological feedback bears description as pre-cybernetic or meta-cybernetic. Indeed, because of their particularly close relationship, the theories of information, computation, and cybernetics are all in line for a convergent extension, an extension that can, in a reality-theoretic context, lay much of the groundwork for a convergent extension of all that is covered by their respective formalisms. Ordinary feedback describing the evolution of mechanical, and with somewhat less success, biological, systems is cyclical or recursive. The system and its components repeatedly call on internal structures, routines, and actuation mechanisms in order to acquire input, generate corresponding internal information, internally communicate and process this information, and evolve to appropriate states in light of input and programming. However, where the object is to describe the evolution of a system from a state in which there is no information or programming, information processing syntax at all, a new kind of feedback is required, telic feedback. Diagram 2. The upper diagram illustrates ordinary cybernetic feedback between two information transducers exchanging and acting on information reflecting their internal states. The structure and behavior of each transducer conforms to a syntax, or set of structural and functional rules which determine how it behaves on a given input. To the extent that each transducer is either deterministic or non-deterministic, within the bounds of syntactic constraint, the system is either deterministic or random up to determinacy. There is no provision for self-causation below the systemic level. The lower diagram, which applies to coherent self-designing systems, illustrates a situation in which syntax and state are instead determined in tandem according to a generalized utility function, assigning differential but intrinsically scaled values to various possible syntax-state relationships. A combination of these two scenarios is partially illustrated in the upper diagram by the gray shadows within each transducer. The currency of telic feedback is a quantifiable self-selection parameter, generalized utility, a generalized property of law and state in the maximization of which they undergo mutual refinement. Note that generalized utility is self-descriptive or autologous, intrinsically and retroactively defined within the system, and pre-informational, in the sense that it assigns no specific property to any specific object. Through telic feedback, a system retroactively self-configures by reflexively applying a generalized utility function to its internal existential potential or possible futures. In effect, the system brings itself into existence as a means of a temporal communication between its past and future, whereby law and state, syntax and informational content generate and refine each other across time to maximize total systemic self-utility. This defines a situation in which the true temporal identity of the system is a distributed point of temporal equilibrium that is both between and inclusive of past and future. In this sense, the system is timeless or atemporal. A system that evolves by means of telic recursion, and ultimately, every system must either be or be embedded in such a system as a condition of existence, is not merely computational, but proto-computational. That is, its primary level of processing configures its secondary, computational and informational level of processing by telic recursion. Telic recursion can be regarded as the self-determinative mechanism of not only cosmogony, but a natural scientific form of teleology. However, before taking these ideas any further, let's attend a little orientation session based on the remarkably penetrating vision of John Archibald Wheeler, a preeminent scientist and reality theorist whose name is virtually synonymous with modern physics. The future of reality theory, according to John Wheeler. In 1979, the celebrated physicist John Wheeler, having coined the phrase black hole, put it to good philosophical use in the title of an exploratory paper, Beyond the Black Hole, 8, in which he describes the universe as a self-excited circuit. The paper includes an illustration in which one side of an uppercase U, ostensibly standing for universe, is endowed with a large and rather intelligent-looking eye, intently regarding the other side, which it ostensibly acquires through observation as sensory information. By dint of placement, the eye stands for the sensory or cognitive aspect of reality, perhaps even a human spectator within the universe, while the eye's perceptual target represents the informational aspect of reality. By virtue of these complementary aspects, it seems that the universe can in some sense, but not necessarily that of common usage, be described as conscious and introspective, perhaps even infocognitive. Diagram 3, the universe as a self-excited circuit. Diagram adapted from Wheeler, an eminent and highly capable representative of those familiar with the advantages and deficiencies of our current models of reality, did not arrive at the given illustration as an isolated speculation. In conjunction with several other Wheeler concepts, the participatory universe, law without law, and it from bit, the self-excited circuit amounts to a preliminary but well-considered program for describing the physical universe. According to its mandate, the true description of reality must possess two novel features not found in any dominant paradigm. 1, global structural and dynamical reflexivity, or self-excited circuitry, with perception an integral part of the self-recognition function of reality. 2, matter-information equivalence, an identification up to isomorphism of concrete physical reality with information, the abstract currency of perception. Together, these features constitute a cosmological extension of cybernetics, or equivalently, a meta-cybernetic extension of cosmology. Wheeler characterizes these four concepts as follows. The self-excited circuit. A participatory universe is a self-excited circuit in the sense that it implicates observers in perceptual ontological feedback. It is a logic loop in which physics gives rise to observer participancy, observer participancy gives rise to information, and information gives rise to physics. The participatory universe. The cognitive and perceptual processes of observers are integral to the self-excitative feedback of reality. This is asserted by the participatory principle, or participatory anthropic principle, which Wheeler informally describes as follows. Stronger than the anthropic principle is what I might call the participatory principle. According to it, we could not even imagine a universe that did not somewhere and for some stretch of time contain observers, because the very building materials of the universe are these acts of observer participancy. This participatory principle takes for its foundation the absolutely central point of the quantum. No elementary phenomenon is a phenomenon until it is an observed or registered phenomenon, Emps added. Note that on some level of generality, the last sentence identifies observation with registration, and thus implicitly equates human and mechanical recognition. An observed or registered phenomenon, emphasis again added. Law without law, order from disorder. Concisely, nothing can be taken as given when it comes to cosmogony. In Professor Wheeler's own words, "To me, the greatest discovery yet to come will be to find how this universe, coming into being from a big bang, developed its laws of operation. I call this law without law, or order from disorder." Imagine the universe, with all its regularities and its laws, coming into being out of something utterly helter-skelter, higgledy-piggledy, and random. If you were the Lord constructing the universe, how would you have gone about it? It's inspiring to read the life of Charles Darwin and think how the division of plant and animal kingdoms, all this myriad of order, came about through the miracles of evolution, natural selection, and chance mutation. To me, this is a marvelous indication that you can get order by starting with disorder. It from bit reality adduces and or produces itself in the form of information residing in quantum events. As Wheeler summarizes in his paper, Information Physics, Quantum, The Search for Links, every physical quantity, every it, derives its ultimate significance from bits, binary yes or no indications. He then goes on to discuss this concept at length, offering three questions, four no's, and five clues about the quantum informational character of reality. The questions are as follows. 1. How come existence? 2. How come the quantum? 3. How come the one world out of many observer participants? The no's, seductive pitfalls to be avoided in answering the three questions, include no Tower of Turtles, no laws, no continuum, and no space or time. And the clues, which light the way toward the true answers, include the boundary of a boundary is zero, no question, no answer, the super Copernican principle, consciousness, including the quotes, and more is different. We will now give a brief account of these questions, precautions, and clues. How come existence? The ontological and cosmological thrust of this question is obvious. In some form, it has bedeviled philosophers from time immemorial. As interpreted by Wheeler, it leads to four inevitable conclusions. 1. The world cannot be a giant machine, ruled by any pre-8 established continuum physical law. 2. There is no such thing at the microscopic level as space or time or space-time continuum. 3. The familiar probability function or functional and wave equation or functional wave equation of standard quantum theory provide mere continuum idealizations and by reason of this circumstance conceal the information theoretic source from which they derive. 4. No element in the description of physics shows itself as closer to primordial than the elementary quantum phenomenon, that is, the elementary device-intermediated act of posing a yes or no physical question and eliciting an answer, or, in brief, the elementary act of observer participancy. Otherwise stated, every physical quantity, every it, derives its ultimate significance from bits, binary yes or no indications, a conclusion which we epitomize in the phrase it from bit. How come the quantum? Why is the universe made up of apparently propter hoc non-deterministic, but post hoc informational, quantum events? As Wheeler observes, quantum physics requires a new view of reality. 14. What then is the exact logical relationship between the quantum and the new view of reality it demands? What is this new view, and how does the quantum fit into it? How come the one world out of many observer participants? Insofar as the term observer participants embraces scientists and other human beings, this question invites a quasi-anthropological interpretation. Why should a universe consisting of separate observers with sometimes conflicting agendas and survival imperatives display structural and nomological unity? Where observers are capable of creating events within the global unitary manifold of their common universe, why should they not be doing it strictly for themselves, each in his or her own universe, and never the twain shall meet? Where the observer-participant concept is generalized to include non-anthropic information-transducing systems, what is holding all of these systems together in a single unified reality? No Tower of Turtles. Borrowed from William James, this aphorism means no infinite regress to ever prior causal domains and principles. To this, we might equate an updated version of a well-known aphorism credited to Harry Truman. The explanatory buck stops here, where here refers to this reality that we actually inhabit and observe. To this, Wheeler adds a crucial insight. To endlessness, no alternative is evident but a loop, such as physics gives rise to observer participancy gives rise to information, and information gives rise to physics. Only such an ontological loop is capable of forming a lariat wide and strong enough for the theoretical lassoing of reality. The task at hand is therefore to locate a way to make it and a medium in which to wield it. No laws. As Wheeler states, the universe must have come into being without even a pre-existing plan. Only a principle of organization, which is no organization at all, would seem to offer itself. 16. Or to reiterate, the world cannot be a giant machine ruled by any pre-established continuum physical law. No continuum, the venerable continuum of analysis and mechanics, is a mathematical and physical chimera. Usually associated with the set of real numbers, a continuum is a unified extensible whole with a distance parameter that can be infinitely subdivided in such a way that any two distinct points are separated by an infinite number of intermediate points. As Wheeler puts it, a half century of development in the sphere of mathematical logic has made it clear that there is no evidence supporting the belief in the existential character of the number continuum. Some numbers, e.g. irrational ones like throw 2, cannot be precisely computed and therefore do not correspond to any physically meaningful location on a number line or physical trajectory. They have an abstract existence only. No space or time. Again, there is no such thing at the microscopic level as space or time or space-time continuum. On the submicroscopic level, the Heisenberg uncertainty principle turns space-time into seemingly chaotic quantum foam, casting doubt on the connectivity of space and the ordinality of time. Wheeler quotes Einstein in a Kantian vein, "Time and space are modes by which we think and not conditions in which we live." Regarding these modes as derivable from a proper theory of reality as idealized functions of an idealized continuum, we will not feed time into any deep-reaching account of existence. We must derive time, and time only in the continuum idealization, out of it. Likewise with space. The boundary of a boundary is zero. In essence, this intuitive notion from algebraic topology says that closed structures embody a certain kind of self-cancellative symmetry. This can be illustrated in three dimensions by a tetrahedron, the simplicial boundary of which incorporates its four equilateral triangular faces. To find the boundary of this boundary, one would measure the clockwise or counterclockwise oriented edges around each face, thus measuring each edge of the tetrahedron twice in opposite directions. Because summing the measurements now cancels to zero at each edge, the boundary of the tetrahedron is zero. This property turns out to have extensive applications in physics, particularly the theory of fields, as regards the mutual grip of matter on space and space on matter, or less colorfully, the relationship of space and matter. In Wheeler's view, its ubiquity inspires hope that we will someday complete the mathematics of physics and derive everything from nothing, all law from no law. 19. Thus, it is closely related to law without law and so-called ex nihilo creation. Diagram 4, 1a, the boundary of a directed one-dimensional line segment consists of its zero-dimensional endpoints, which separate the line from its complement, the space surrounding the line. The initial point represents the debt required to start the line and is thus given a value of magus 1, while the terminal point represents the payoff for completing the line and is given a value of plus 1. When the initial and terminal points of the line are identified as indicated by the curved arrow, the result is a closed line bounding a planar disk, 1b. Because the endpoints now coincide, they sum to zero and no longer separate the line from its complement. Thus, the zero-dimensional boundary of the one-dimensional boundary of the two-dimensional disk is zero. MER2A, a triangular area can be decomposed into four smaller triangular areas. Introducing a uniform, in this case, clockwise orientation to the areas, red arrows, imparts the same orientation to the outer perimeter, outer blue arrows, recreating the situation of 1B. Notice that the blue arrows next to each interior edge point in opposite directions and therefore cancel. Again, the initial and terminal points of the perimeter coincide and cancel to zero, no matter where they lie. When adjacent perimeter segments are identified as indicated by the outer arrows, the triangle folds into a tetrahedron 2B. Its faces form a closed, two-dimensional